Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Tesla confusion over Musk's response to reporting. Kia is committing to an EV future and more rapid charging milestones. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you what the leading EV adopter Norway is saying about incentives to go electric. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Wherever you are in the world, it's EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for Monday, 8th of April. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We're live at 5 p.m. UK. That's midday Eastern, but Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Well, Tesla has reportedly halted its project to develop an affordable EV, with plans diverted towards robo-taxi technology, as per a Reuters report that broke pretty late in the day on Friday, just before we started to wind down for the weekend. Well, the decision to discontinue the budget EV was communicated during a late February meeting. According to this Reuters report, with numerous Tesla employees in attendance, internal communications reviewed by Reuters instructed employees to delay informing suppliers about the program's cancellation. Additional messages directed staff to instruct suppliers to cease activities related to this budget model, known externally as H422 and with the internal codename NV91. Well, Tesla's stock experienced a partial recovery late in the day on Friday, following the CEO Elon Musk's denial via his social media network X. But unfortunately, it was just a simple denial of the entire article, which said that robo-taxis would be the focus rather than the affordable so-called Model 2. Well, that was a less useful response, if you ask me, from the CEO, denying it completely. So is the whole story wrong? Is it just wrong that we were going to get access for the public to buy an affordable car? Is it going to be that robo-taxis are the focus on this platform and that someday they'll make that platform available to us to buy as driver cars, or will this new platform simply not be designed to have a steering wheel and pedals? Well, there's no clue in his response as to which part of the story was true or not. I will say that having read the story, the original reporting, which many people didn't, that it seemed to be exceptionally sourced. It was not named sources because, you know, instant firing if you were found to be leaking to the media, which Musk and Tesla over the years has been a pretty hot topic with them going to extreme lengths to weed out whistleblowers. But I won't get into that now. And the report seemed very legitimate in terms of the reporting of the internal meetings that happened, the timeline as to when this project was mothballed, and the focus to be on robo-taxis. What did happen later in the day on Friday was Musk posting that there would be a robo-taxi announcement on the 8th of the 8th. And again, 88 being a number which did infuriate certain corners of the internet, what with Musk's recent activities on his social network of amplifying certain corners, like I say, of the internet, a number that maybe just trolling us all now. However, this was something which infuriated Tesla fans, I think, and probably gave more fuel for the fire for those that, for whatever reason, want to see Tesla fail. But it was certainly not a great response in terms of having useful information for the rest of us kind of more independent-minded people. Now, yesterday, the Tesla chief designer, Franz von Holzhausen, actually addressed this subject. Now, he's one of very few people in the world who will be able to talk on Tesla's behalf. There's a handful of executives that can say things in public and not be fired. Franz has appeared on podcasts before a couple of times on the Ride the Lightning podcast. Very highly rated. Love that show with Ryan McCaffrey. It's a Tesla fan podcast, but if you know what you're getting into, it's very good. And he can speak on behalf of the company without fear of getting told off from his boss. He's been there long enough. He's important enough. And he commented on the $25,000 vehicle being snowballed during a panel at the Peterson Automotive Museum, where the discussion included participants from Tesla fan blogs and the automotive community. A question from the audience was raised about the $25,000 vehicle, and he suggested that we should stay tuned and don't always believe what you read. I think we can have a listen to that right now.
I think investors and consumers would love to know if the $25,000 car is dead or just on the back burner.
I would just say stay tuned. Don't always believe in what you read.
Yeah, it's probably worth giving him the final word on this topic, actually, because that's the best way to judge Tesla is on what they deliver. After a couple of thousand daily episodes of this podcast, I have long learned not to listen to what Mr. Musk says on social media or even on earnings calls. And I must admit that many times over the years, we've become very excited about things that have been promised at Tesla, which don't materialize, whether it's things like, you know, Hyperloop and the rest. So I judge Tesla on what they deliver. They sometimes do, they sometimes don't. But then when they deliver a robo-taxi or when they go and get regulatory approval for this and we wait and see what the technology is like, let's judge it then. Now, I'm not so naive to think that that doesn't mean people are going to spend however long between now and August talking and debating the robo-taxi. It's probably an important topic if you invest in things like EV shares because you'll want to know, is this one real or is this just more vaporware? Will it ever arrive? Is it 5 years away? Is it going to be like a Cybertruck? Is it like a Roadster that's 10 years between announcement and we may see that or may never see that? Well, Tesla's pivot towards focusing on robo-taxi development over a low-cost car project faces significant obstacles. And like I say, I think people are going to be talking about this in analysis, in all kind of forms of talking about Tesla. This particular report from Automotive News, a very highly regarded publication, points out that Musk's strategy for autonomy relies on radar and camera. In fact, nearly solely vision, intentionally, though, excluding LiDAR, which uses pulsed laser light, achieving full autonomy for self-driving vehicles outside of China, for instance, is almost always done with LiDAR. So not using that is certainly a challenge to go vision only. They point out that Tesla's commitment to vehicle autonomy made 8 years ago has seen many shifts over the years. Been told many times that the car shipping now have all the hardware they need, and then early owners being told, well, no, we're still working the hardware out, and so your cars don't get it, but we'll try and get software to you at some point, which means your cars are useful. The company's pursuit of robo-taxis occurs at a time when, I should point out, there is growing legal scrutiny of Tesla and growing regulatory scrutiny of robo-taxis. And surely that's not a bad thing. We want to make sure they're safe, whoever's making them, particularly concerning things like full self-driving and how it's advertised. Notable recently that Tesla finally dropped the beta word from full self-driving and replaced it with the word supervised. And I wouldn't be surprised if that came from Tesla's legal department and the idea that it's anything that is near to full self-driving, at least adding the word supervised, perhaps a compromise that the CEO would get behind, certainly does more than imply you have to supervise the system. Well, Tesla's also under investigation by the US Justice Department for misleading claims about its vehicle self-driving abilities. And more specifically, its somewhat divisive figurehead CEO Elon Musk is facing increased criticism for a series of unmet promises and optimistic forecasts over the years. He's cried wolf perhaps one too many times for some people regarding the ability of automated driving technology. And if you listen to those people who have got the latest version of this, maybe even taking advantage of the month-long free trial that's going on right now, many of them will say that since the last time they tried it, it's come on leaps and bounds, that they're doing entire drives or commutes without having to intervene, and that the technology is working extremely well. So once again, like I say, perhaps we should all just either try the technology for ourselves or wait until Tesla go through that process with the regulators, with states, with countries, with bodies like here in Europe and those that set the rules. We've had some, I won't get into it now, but a recent set of rule changes that which I think is mean that we will never see FSD over here, and so in its current form, certainly, and those rules kick in, I think, towards the end of this year. Maybe I'll make a special podcast about that. Well, I'm much happier talking about actual products and things that are in the here and now that they have made and customers have, and that would be the Cybertruck. And one of the stories that I couldn't help but notice over the weekend is how many Cybertrucks are listed for sale right now. Nearly new Cybertrucks with delivery mileage, really, are surfacing on resale markets shortly after their production has started. I'll pop this example here from Car Gurus on the screen for our YouTube viewers. The Cyberbeast is listed for $240,000. Now, I have organized this and sorted it by the highest price first. I could do it lowest price first for our YouTube viewers. It starts at $149,000, which is a 50 grand premium over what these people would have paid. Initial buyers who placed the early orders have begun receiving their vehicles, and resale prices on CarGurus and places like Kelly Blue Book reflecting these similar prices of from 150 to 250. Worth pointing out as well that they're not really delivering these in the reservation order, but if you're a celebrity, someone with some profile who can amplify this vehicle, that you're finding that those people can get hold of one and skip the queue. If I don't think they've ever said that they would deliver it in chronological order of those who ordered it. I mean, I guess we all assume that, but I don't know if they ever said that out loud, but notably Cybertrucks available are not equipped with Tesla's autopilot or full self-driving feature, so we can't even judge them on that at the moment. I've said this before on the podcast, I'm kind of sad that people are flipping them because it's such a novel vehicle that I think if you were lucky enough to get one, then it would be a cool thing to drive for 6 months or a year. There is also the contract that Tesla require you to check with them first, that they might want to buy the vehicle back before you resell it. And I think there's enough reports around now online from places like Reddit and the owners' forums from people saying, hey, I contacted Tesla. I said that I'm going to sell the Cybertruck. Do you want to buy it back? Tesla they declined that invitation, and so they are fine to sell it on. So people saying, oh, you can't resell a Cybertruck, you'll get fined. From what I gather, people just have to go through that process of saying, do you want it back? Tesla say no, and then you're fine to sell it. Now, these people would all be making a very big chunk of change profit, and that's why I'm kind of sad about it, because it's a novel vehicle, you know? Kids notice it, you're going to get waves, people will stare when you're driving. Maybe you don't want that, but maybe you don't buy a Cybertruck if you don't want to be noticed at the moment. But what an interesting thing to have an experience, let your friends and family be around and drive rather than just flipping it for change. But hey, people will do what people do, I guess. But I think that's kind of a shame. Well, for anyone who's had a recent podcast or maybe heard me on the Batteries Included podcast I do with my buddies Dom and Tom and Kyle every Friday on our separate show that we do there for a couple of hours talking about EVs. My current thing is, if you say, look, I got $30,000+ to spend on an EV in America, what should I buy? The answer is Model Y. Every day of the week, Tesla is reducing the prices of Model Y to address the problem that they've got with inventory and inventory surplus. Now, I've mentioned before they've got a capacity surplus, and I'll get into that in a moment if you leave us tuned in. Following a production that exceeded deliveries by 46,500 vehicles in Q1, and now for my YouTube viewers, I'll pop a graphic on screen from Bloomberg that highlights this very visually, because for the last few quarters, apart from one, they have had more production than deliveries. And I've stared at this for long enough, and I now need your help in the comments, because this would imply that they more often than not have more production than they deliver. But that just means that there would be whole entire car parks, you know, full of Teslas not sold. I mean, at some point you have to sell. If you're overproducing and not delivering, you have to sell them. And so the logic is right. Yeah, you can't just keep on overproducing. You can't store them somewhere. So maybe I've read this wrong. But either way, almost 50,000 cars this quarter, which they produced, which aren't yet sold. And the Model Y has some serious, serious discounts that I want you to have a look at. The Model Y has $4,500 off the rear wheel drive, $5,000 off long range and performance models. Post reduction, the prices are very, very attractive. I'll put that on screen now for our YouTube viewers. Model Y now starts at $32,990. Now, Tesla have introduced a new, I was going to say checkbox, but it's kind of a slider. So a toggle, that's the word, toggle, on their website in the US for the federal tax credit. Now, that is something that's worth $7,500 if your income for joint or single filers hit certain criteria. But this is effectively money off the vehicle. It's a tax credit, but it's at the point of sale. And so although the car is $40,490, it's effective $32,990. That's for a Model Y rear wheel drive. But for a Model Y long range, it is a bit of a jump. And I always tell people, look, if you can get the mileage, you should get the mileage. If you're going to buy an EV and you've got the option to get the range and you can swing it, get the range. It's listed at $44,990 as of recording today. Price has been changing all weekend, actually, by $50 here and there. But $37,490 for a long range vehicle, I think, is exceptional with that $7,500 federal tax credit. And like I say, this has changed a few times over even recent days, kind of fluctuated. Maybe it's the time of that they have in stock or that I've been looking at the website. But either way, those are the current prices. $37,490 for the long range. Now, that was for a vehicle that had a couple of thousand miles on, but there are 50-mile vehicles, effectively new. It's new inventory that are the same price as that, which just kind of blows my mind. It's a 300-plus-mile vehicle. I mean, your mileage will vary depending on how you use it. The performance is just over 40,000, by the way, just to finish off the lineup. In addition, Tesla is now offering 3 months of complimentary FSD. The analyst Ryan Brinkman from JP Morgan Chase highlighting that the disparity between Tesla's production and sales numbers contradicts the theory that the first quarter was so bad because it was limited by production. It was actually limited by a demand issue. This particular analyst predicting Tesla will face a $1.3 billion free cash flow deficit in light of the surge in stock on hand, in inventory. And so now is a great time, at least for my US listeners, if you want a new car in the 30s, Model Y is incredibly capable, and Tesla want shot of them. And I'll tell you why, as I referenced a few moments ago, their production capacity is far exceeding what they can sell at the moment. According to the Q4 shareholder letter, they have installed capacity to make, of all the various vehicles they make, around 2.5 million vehicles if they maxed out every facility. And you're never going to do that because of downtime, because of renewal, because of things like Chinese New Year, because of shutdowns and maintenance. But if you know, in theory, about 2.5 million, give or take. And they just did less than 400,000 in one quarter. Now, you could be, if you want to extrapolate that over a 12 month and say they're going to do 1.5 or 1.6 million this year, and no one knows, because no one knows what, no one thought it was going to be this bad in the first quarter. So it could have a massive recovery. Already the Chinese figures look pretty good, by the way, for the monthlies on March, but either way. Then it could be having hundreds of thousands of vehicles capacity not being used, which in the automotive world, as we found out during the pandemic, can take down even the biggest of car companies and certainly cause some head scratching. And so my point being, this is very good for the customer. It's very bad for Tesla's books because they want to be using that installed production. Otherwise, it's a massive capital drain on the company. And so this isn't a financial podcast, never pretends to be anything. It's not a Tesla podcast, but I do recommend this vehicle, the Model Y, right now, because it seems stellar value. And finally, if you are a new car purchaser and you're an existing owner, this Teslarati report pointing out that Tesla has reintroduced the free full self-driving transfers. If you bought FSD, you can transfer. It was a one-time amnesty last year, never to be repeated. A single-time offer, according to the CEO, Elon Musk. We'll never do this again. It's a one-time thing, which then happened for a second time this year, and now for a third time. So, like I say, judge them on what they do, not on what they say. But we can judge them on what they're doing at the moment, and that is, if you are an FSD owner and you're changing from an older to a new vehicle, the offer is available. Currently, Tesla has reopened the transferability of FSD for all of them, for S3, X, and Y, easy for me to say, without necessitating a trade-in. The transferability feature can be combined with other sales incentives, and Tesla commits to deactivating FSD on the previous vehicle within two days, I think, of activating it on your new one within a week after delivery, which I must admit has always been a bit of a bugbear of mine, because people who are spending thousands of dollars on software that never really delivered what they thought they were buying, I just think it's a decent, honest thing to do, but the more cynical, hard-nosed people would say it's a demand lever that they can pull. But I think, yeah, it's the right demand lever to pull. And if you've bought it and never had a chance to use it until now, when it came out of so-called beta, then that's a good thing. Well, if Tesla's not your thing, thank you for bearing with me then today. There's a lot of Tesla stuff over the weekend to get into. I thought it was very interesting. And we try not to dominate the podcast with one manufacturer or over another, but there's a lot of stuff to get into. So a lot of Tesla news to get into today. But this Cleantechnica report coming out recently, which had a look at the global EV figures, points to more good news, with global plug-in vehicle registrations increasing by 3% compared to the same month, February last year. Plug-in vehicles now account for 13% of the total market worldwide. BEVs were an 8%. The year-to-date market share for plug-in vehicles is 14% and 9% for BEVs. And battery electric vehicles, BEVs, were 64% of all plug-in vehicle registrations in the month of February. I know we're into April already, but these data take a while to come through and compile. As always, the excellent work of EV Volumes and Cleantechnica. Thank you very much to their reporting on this, the trend underscoring the ongoing shift towards EVs in the global market, while some countries are moving at different speeds to get towards 20% of plug-in vehicles on a global basis, is more good news. Well, at the end of last week, Kia unveiled details of their future EV roadmap at their CEO Investor Day in Seoul, in South Korea, and Kia outlined its mid- to long-term electrification strategy, aiming to become a leader in the global EV market. The company reaffirmed their target to sell 4.3 million vehicles every single year by 2030, 1.6 million being EVs. That's a big number. An annual target of 1.6 million, with Kia planning for electrified models, including hybrids and pure BEVs, to be 58% of their total sales by the end of the decade. That'll be 2.48 million sales annually. Let's have a look at their EV strategy. The lineup will expand with new EV models named EV2 to Kia EV5, with production at 13 global factories. By 2027, Kia aims to offer 15 pure EV models globally, the company focusing on improving battery technology for enhanced performance and cost effectiveness, advancements in NMC batteries, and also LFP technology, as is so popular with the Chinese battery makers. Kia committing to a significant charging infrastructure with 5,500 EPIT stations in South Korea and 30,000 stations in North America as part of the IONNA joint venture, building more than 17,000 stations in Europe with IONITY as for specific models reaching customers at certain times. Six new EV models will be launched by 2026 in 2 years' time, starting with the EV3. Now, the EV3 comes next year, or maybe even towards the end of this year, followed by EV2 and EV4 either side of it. Also then the EV5 coming as well, plus two more region-specific EVs, like the Karens brand for India. I'll pop a link to that that full story in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Volvo are next. They're on a bit of a rip in terms of the models they're launching and renaming to bring other things in line as well. Volvo is moving towards their goal of full electrification, including their naming updates and the new powertrain options across the UK lineup. This is technically a 2025 model year vehicle, but it's now available to order and purchase. The electric C40 and the XC40 get their new names now here in the UK. So C40 becomes EC40 and the XC40 becomes XC40, which makes sense because that joins up with the EX30, the smaller vehicle, and the EX90, the big SUV as well. But the XC40 name remains with anything with an engine inside of it. The EC40 and EX40 have a new single motor extended range powertrain joining the existing single motor rear wheel drive and twin motor configurations. The new range goes up to 346 miles, that's 557 kilometers. And these models feature a 78 kilowatt hour battery with 75 kilowatt hours usable and a rear axle mounted electric motor, 252 horsepower and 140 kilowatt watts of peak charging speed, and a better efficiency coming out of the new hardware as well, with an optional performance software upgrade for the twin motor versions of both the EC40 and the EX40 for a horsepower boost to 442 horsepower. The refreshed Volvo EVs are now on sale in the UK. First deliveries will be this summer. Well, a bit of truck charging news I missed on my holidays last week when I was away for Easter. Kempower unveiled their 1.2 megawatt charger for electric trucks. The Finnish company Kempower introducing their system, which will use both the megawatt charging system, MCS, and the high-powered CCS system for this as well. Kempower's charging capability allows for power distribution, like many, but it's an intelligent power distribution based on the demand of every vehicle that's plugged in. It optimizes the charging times and reduces the cost for operators. The initial release of the MCS standard, the megawatt charging system solution standard. I've seen it called different things with the S in MCS. It has a peak power output of 1,500 amps and 1.2 megawatts of power, accompanied by the Kempower Mega Satellite for enhanced compatibility, also coming with the CCS plug as well. CCS2, I should point out, designed for flexibility. Kind of amazed that MCS isn't now done and dusted, wrapped up as a standard and out there in the market, but Charon are doing their thing at their own pace. So for now, CCS is out there, but some companies having to release vehicles with a CCS2 socket on the side and saying when MCS is fully ratified, then we can take those vehicles back and put the new connector on the side. I thought it was all done. I used the MCS system last June. And chunky it is as well. But I thought that would be certainly by this time of 2024, well and truly out there and a standard by now. But Kempower having to hedge their bets a little bit on that. Just time for a couple more stories, and staying in the Nordics, and Norway is adjusting its plans for toll discounts for EVs, previously highlighted as a crucial aspect of their EV policy. And despite the adjustments coming certainly in Oslo to begin with, EVs are still going to receive government subsidies. So maybe those toll roads, those tolls will start to charge for EVs. And why is this interesting to the rest of us that don't live in Norway? Because they have a 90% EV adoption rate for new vehicles and heading towards a 50% or, you know, more cars, or rather, you know, because there's also some diesel cars there, but really with EVs and petrol, a parity in terms of the established car park. That's going to happen at some point as well. New car sales is one thing. Replacing the existing vehicles on the road is another. Despite the adjustments, EVs will still obviously car have many benefits in Norway. The National Transport Strategy reaffirming the ambition for all new heavy-duty vehicles as well to be emission-free or powered by biogas by 2030. So there's still many benefits in Norway, and I think many reasons the rest of us should look at Norway and say, well, what is it you do? Is it that you've got the wave on toll roads? Can you park in certain places? Can you use bus or taxi lanes? What are the advantages that Norway's done to encourage this EV adoption? Anything we can learn from that? The ones that you think, well, that wouldn't be useful, but maybe that'd be a good thing that we can use. And that way we can move to clean green transport as quick as they're doing. Well, Brazil is importing more Chinese EVs, a significant increase in the first quarter of this year in anticipation of forthcoming rising import tariffs. The Brazilian government is reinstating import taxes on EVs to bolster the domestic auto industry. Taxes that had been eliminated since 2015 are coming back and ramping up as well to be 35% import taxes by July 2026. The move prompted many of the importers in Brazil to accelerate the EVs coming in from China to avoid those higher taxes. Chinese competitors like BYD and GWM, a Great Wall Motor, have been expanding their investment in local EV production in Brazil following the announcement of these tax changes. Well, we've now got some more details on NIO's 150 kilowatt hour semi-solid state battery pack, which is going into their vehicles. A significant investment in battery technology at NIO. The company is mostly known for smaller battery pack sizes, like 70 or 75 kilowatt hour packs as standard and 100 kilowatt hours for the extended range packs. Now introducing the 150 kilowatt hour semi-solid state pack, according to cnevpost.com, I found today, by the end of this month, April 2024. The very large battery pack recognizes the highest energy density content battery currently being made, mass-produced, at least in China. The battery specialist WeLion supplies NIO with these battery packs. First ones arrived last summer, and now they're finally in a state to go out to customers by the end of this month. And that's kind of interesting because NIO, famous for battery swapping, there's so many battery swap stations now close to where you are as a NIO customer in China, that do you even want to pay the extra to swap a 150 kilowatt hour pack to carry the weight, the penalty, if you just need to pop in and swap for a 75 kilowatt hour pack? I think you pay less. I'll double check. I think NIO customers pay less in China for the smaller packs. Then why would you want the bigger pack? That's one of the benefits of battery swapping, unless you're going on a long road trip, of course, and you need the extra range. But we like to see these advancements. And talking of Chinese battery technology, finally on the podcast today, the Zeekr 001 achieves a rapid charging milestone. The 001, Zeekr's first model, has been updated hardware-wise with CATL's new battery, some new driving assistance features with a new LiDAR, new 800-volt architecture as well. It extends the wheelbase slightly, but what we are interested in is this new CATL battery with a capacity of 95 kilowatt hours. And I'll pop the link online and I'll show our YouTube viewers this post on X. The demonstration of charging it to 80%, 10 to 80, I should say, 10 to 80% in 11.5 minutes. Wow. Less than 12 minutes and you get an 80% charge. And in a shorter charge period, for instance, maybe a quick boost, you can add at least maybe 150 miles of range to that vehicle. Now, obviously, it's a CLTC, which is wildly optimistic, so I always want to stay away from the figures that I was showing you on screen, which is the Chinese way of saying, hey, this many miles in this many minutes, because that's not real-world range. So let's talk about peak speeds. Zeekr 001 charges at 546 kilowatts. I mean, it's not bad, is it? 546 kilowatts peak speed. It has a sustained charging power up to 35% of 540 kilowatts, and it will then ramp down to about 250 kilowatts. This new CATL battery, I think it's called the Shenxing battery, and I believe it's LFP, or lithium iron phosphate technology as well, has some, as you can imagine, pretty advanced thermal management to ensure that it stays cool, but also will charge in low temperatures as well. And it's exclusively available on the all-wheel drive version of the Zeekr 001. If you absolutely cannot wait more than 12 minutes to charge your EV in China, then this is the one you should get. You've made it to the end of another podcast. You should get a medal or something. Therapy. No one needs that much of me. And if you are a Patreon supporter of the show, you are a legend. It's how we fund not only this podcast, it's how I pay my bills these days. And thank you for watching. Thank you for supporting, by the way. And if you want to have a look at how to be first and ad-free and be one of the Patreon legends, have a look at patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. You haven't got to. There'll always be a free version online, on podcast, usual place you get podcasts, on YouTube, etc. But if you want to have a look at supporting my work, that would be incredible. And thanks, as always, to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, providing all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.